although we've still got Patrick and Levies.
Oh.
Oh, darn.
Patrick?
Yeah.
It's not reasonable to think we can do that in 25 minutes, is it? Yeah, it's what's scheduled. All right. Take your shot. Moving to paper number 8.
Yeah, okay. We move to paper 8 on the interpretation on levies. The final interpretation presented in Appendix A of this paper has been updated on the basis of the committee's decisions. The final interpretation presented in Appendix B shows changes made to the draft interpretation published in May 2012. And we also provide in the paper a comparison between the final interpretation and the draft interpretation published in May 2012 so that the committee can decide whether it wants to re-expose the final interpretation. We recommend that the final interpretation is not re-exposed for comments. We don't think that there are any new requirements or new principles in the final interpretation. We acknowledge that the committee decided that the accounting for levies with minimum thresholds should be added to the final interpretation, but the committee concluded that these levies should be accounted for consistently with the principles established in the consensus. So we do not think that the interpretations needs to be re-exposed. Lastly, we propose that an entity should apply the interpretation for annual periods beginning on or after 1st January 2014. Earlier application would be permitted. So our questions for the committee are the following. Does the interpretations committee agree with the staff recommendation that the final interpretation is not re-exposed? And if so, does the interpretations committee agree to publish the interpretation presented in Appendix A of this paper?
Before we open it for discussion, this interpretation was the subject of some comments by some board members during the discussion of the role of future events and the definition of a liability, looking at the conceptual framework. Some board members observed that they wished that the interpretation had been able to come to a different answer, and they were exploring different approaches to the definition of a liability that might lead you to a different answer. At no occasion, and I'll ask other board members to confirm, did I hear any board members say they thought that this was not the appropriate interpretation based on the existing standards and framework. They were saying that, gosh, this makes us uncomfortable, and if we did something different in the framework, would that propel a different answer? Now, remember that our schedule for the framework is to complete it in approximately 2.5 years from today. Then we would have to go through agenda consultation and attempt to revise a standard that we were unable to revise before. So this interpretation, in my view, would continue to fill a hole in practice that needs to be filled. And we shouldn't defer work just because the board is kind of blue-skying the definition of a net liability right now. But with that in mind, Bert, oh, one other revision. Because of changes in the due process handbook, when I'm going to put the question to you a little bit differently, because you will now be asked to ballot in writing, but during the public meeting, I will ask if anybody plans to object. So that's a little bit different approach than we've followed in the past. Now, Bert, go ahead.
I agree with questions 1 and 3. So no re-exposure and the application beginning January 14. I have two small comments on question 2. For the changes that have been made to the interpretation. In paragraph 4 of the new interpretation in Appendix A on page 8, It says an entity is not required to apply this interpretation. Does that imply a judgment, or does it imply that it is not allowed to require it if it is in this, if it is to liabilities arising from emission trading schemes? What does, so is it a choice, or is it, it's a choice, and it's intended to be a choice?
We don't want to prevent people from applying the interpretation
okay.
if they wish to do so, but we do
so
not
we
require
intend to,
them
to put
apply
a,
it
a
for,
choice in there.
For emissions trading.
All right, understood. And last comment, paragraph 12 says, an entity shall recognize an asset if it has paid a levy but does not yet have a present obligation to pay that. Shouldn't we put this into the issues in paragraph 5 as well, because it's not listed there? So we answer an issue that has not been raised. It's just for clarity's sake, but not necessarily so. But
okay, I'm going to go back to Sandy and then just work around the table.
I guess I had a question. Maybe I missed this in the earlier conversation, but on example 4, the variation at the bottom, are we suggesting that the liability at July 17th, because you've hit the threshold, gets pushed forward?
Yes.
I guess I missed that at the earlier decision, because it seems inconsistent. I mean, we're saying in the interim financial statements, then for the one above, we've incurred the threshold and we book it on July 17th. But if it's a threshold and then continues on, that we pay it as a percentage of revenue, then we take the whole thing and spread it forward? Am I reading that incorrectly?
What do you mean by take the whole thing and spread it forward?
Okay, so it says, in the same fact pattern as above, except that the amount of the levy is determined by reference to all revenues generated by D. Okay, oh, maybe that's the issue. In this example, the liability is also recognized progressively. So we don't recognize anything in the first half of the year. And then in the second half of the year, we recognize the first half of the year going forward.
Yes.
As soon
as you hit the threshold, you recognize the threshold amount.
That's what the top says, but that's not what the bottom says.
Recognize progressively, I think, is the top. Because they recognize progressively, I think it applies to some people that the liability when you hit the threshold is recognized all the remainder.
Yes, that's how I read that. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because I read that is that you take that amount, say it was 2% of 50 million on that, and that was inconsistent with the decision above.
Well, in the second sentence, we say the amount of the liability is based on the revenues generated to date. So I think that the measurement is quite clear.
I think we can do a wording fix on that.
Also, So in example 2, we would never require anyone to disclose the amount of that payment that's going to come on January 3rd. Because to me, I would think as a user of the financial statements, you'd want to know that that's coming. But I know...
You already have some disclosure requirements in IS 34.
Okay, maybe that's...
When you incur a cost unevenly, you have to provide some disclosures.
So even though I haven't recognized anything, I'm required to disclose it?
Information about it, yes.
Okay, all right. Also, I wasn't clear on what this language meant. The levy, it's in not example 1, but it's in example 2, 3, and 4. So maybe I'm just reading. It says the levy cost should be anticipated or deferred for the interim period reporting purposes if and only if it is also appropriate to anticipate or defer that type of cost at the end of the financial year.
That's the wording that is used in IS 34, paragraph 39.
I'm not getting what it means relative to the above. Maybe I just don't understand, but I'm trying to understand what that actually tells me.
Well, It just tells that you have to do the same thing that you would do in your annual financial statements. But we didn't want to change that wording because this is the exact wording that is used in IS 34. If the committee thinks that it doesn't add anything, then we can delete it. But
Guido?
I had the same problem. It's actually also in the interpretation in paragraph 11, the last sentence.
Yep.
And I was asking myself, could you give me an example where you would anticipate or defer something that is not an asset or liability?
I just felt like it wasn't needed. It actually, I read everything and understood it, and then I got confused
about what it was actually telling me.
Yeah, because 39 of 34 addresses issues where costs are incurred unevenly, and that's why people might think that in 34 you could spread them evenly over the year. And I mean, I would leave it out.
Okay, I think if the committee wants to,
certainly can do that.
I thought that was particularly important because of the controversy that we've had about interim reporting and whether or not you do the same thing at the interim date that you do at an annual date. And to me, that language makes it crystal clear that if you wouldn't accrue that liability at the end of an annual period, you can't accrue it at the end of an interim period. To me, that language was very important to make the answer clear. And that is what was the most controversial thing, in my view, in this interpretation.
Joanna, you're on a two hands up basis.
But I think, Patricia, that that's actually covered by the introductory sentence in paragraph 11, by effectively saying it should be the same recognition principles in the interim as in the final. Because to me, the actual bit about anticipating or deferral almost adds an extra bit to it that, as you say, you've got it all clear, and then suddenly,
I'm deferring it again? Yeah. I mean, the basis of conclusion to me in BC 28 and 20, I guess it's just, it's all part of 28 now, told me it's the same for interim as annual. Mm. So I just didn't, somehow that connoted to me, I was smoothing something and I thought that's what we weren't doing. But I appreciate your point.
Okay, let's not draft in the meeting. John? Sorry, I thought I turned it on.
Yeah. Just a couple of comments. The exclusion for emission trading schemes, I suppose one of the questions is emissions trading scheme a globally understood definition, given that it's in the scoping of the interpretation? I mean, I think most people are familiar with different types of schemes that exist around the globe, but there are a raft of different characteristics to those schemes, some of which are more in the nature of carbon levies or taxes. Some are actually schemes where there are permits which are traded. Some are schemes that have an instrument, but they're not traded. So I suppose I had some concern about whether there was a clarity on the scope out for emissions trading schemes or whether we needed a definition of exactly what that encompassed.
We thought about it, but there is currently no definition of emission trading schemes in the ISB project, and we felt we couldn't give a definition. So we acknowledged that there is a lack of clarity here, but I don't think we can do more than what we have done.
Yeah, we were concerned about preempting the board's project on emission trading schemes if we tried to define what those are in this project before the board's done so in its own project.
Okay. Yes?
You did into the opening comments, Wayne. Yeah, I also just want to make sure that board intention because after the conceptual framework discussion, I saw some examples of the levies. And my recollection is the minimum threshold is a board intention originally was different from the current interpretation. So I just want to make sure if we go through this interpretation or to the board approval, so the board intention has changed from that maybe a year ago meeting. And for the timing, because if this is effective January 2014 and the conceptual framework is September 2015, even conceptual framework has determined the liability might change something longer. I can understand this interpretation go live for a long, certain period, but we know this intention is not not counterintuitive, and then we have half of the comments is not technically correct, but doesn't reflect the substance. So we agree this is technically correct, but I just want to make sure this is, as a committee, to deliver this interpretation is the right decision.
Well, that is the question we'll ask. Remember that the board hasn't even read this version, except for the board members who participate in our meetings, that the conceptual framework is at the discussion paper phase. And so any proposed changes to the definition of a liability that will be in the discussion paper may have some likelihood of collapsing back onto the existing definition by the time we get to an exposure draft. And if we make the deadline, which I think most of our constituents believe is very optimistic, but our chairman is committed to, then we'd still have to reconsider standards because the framework doesn't change standards. So I think this is likely to have a significant shelf life. Andrew?
Well, just to reiterate some of the previous comments, my only comment of any significance is to delete that sentence in paragraph 11 and examples about anticipating deferring costs.
Yep. Point taken. Laurence, you got 2 minutes.
I still have drafting points I want to clear with the staff, but my three main comments. The first one is I would like to see BC7 in the standards because it was a significant decision that we made, and I think it cannot just stay in a basis for conclusion. Which is the one that says that payment by an entity for the acquisition of an asset, rendering of services under a contractual agreement with the government does not meet the definition of a levy. So
you'd move that up into the definition?
In the scope.
Any objection to that?
The second comment is, I noticed that in the basis for conclusion, there is no summary of comments received from constituents, whether they agreed with the exposure draft or disagreed with the exposure draft. There is no such feedback in the basis for conclusion. So I find this a little bit surprising, as if we had not listened to them, not summarized what they say. So I was hoping to see something in the basis for conclusion. And finally,
something like what?
Whether they agreed or disagreed with the proposals that were made. Whether they supported or did not support the interpretations. And if they did not support, why we considered that we should nonetheless issue it? And this comes to my last point, which is with respect to the vote on this interpretation. While I'm not going to object, my vote is an abstain. I know that you don't have abstain, but it is an abstain for all the reasons I had exposed previously at the stage of the exposure draft, that I believe that this issue of taxes paid by companies, whether they are levies, this is not the right way to address them. And it's a more comprehensive project that should be undertaken about payments to governments that are, whether income tax or taxes, it's about the same thing, and we get to different outcomes here. So it's not, I'm not going to object, but I'm not going to support either. It's an abstain.
On your first point, I had taken it that Patrick was addressing the issues seriatim rather than attempting to capture them all up front. Let us take a look at the style that we use. Certainly, an interpretation this significant would probably require a feedback statement anyway, and that would be in the feedback statement almost certainly. But we'll take a look. I take your point. John, last call.
On the issue of re-exposure, I read from 13A that we simply apply to minimum threshold the same principle that were already re-exposed, and therefore there's no need to re-expose. I have a question for the practitioner, I guess, or for the staff. Do we know if that will that proposal will in other words, when you reach the minimum threshold to record as a cumulative catch-up adjustment, whether that would bring significant change to the practice for situations such as volume discount? Which, in other words, I'm not sure that this is not a very controversial proposal in terms of variable payments. And I would like to make sure that this is not going to change very very extensively the practice for, you know, outside of this very limited scope project, in which case, if the answer would be yes, then I would say, well, I'm not sure that this is not a matter for re-exposure. So it's a question because I don't have the information.
I would say that this is very clearly focusing on levies, not on contracts. And you mentioned volume discounts, and that would arise, obviously, in contractual arrangements. So in terms of volume discounts on the purchasing side, presumably, are you referring to the purchasing side rather than the selling side?
The purchasing side.
Yes. I mean, there you've got a contractual arrangement. IS 3239 would apply. In terms of, you know, what sort of obligations have you got? Whereas this is very much focused on IAS 37 and the application of IAS 37 and to non-contractual arrangements.
Ron's last call.
On that issue, I had received the same type of comments from people outside the arena, whether this was not throwing doubts how to account for volume rebates for purchases of inventories. The response I have given is that for purchases of inventories, we are in IAS 2. We are trying to determine the cost of inventory. The item is already on the books. You're trying to determine what's the cost of inventory that is on the book. So it's no longer an issue of recognition. It's an issue of measurement. And in determining what is the measurement of the cost of inventory, effectively you have to forecast the cash inflows, cash outflows that would relate to the purchase of this inventory. But I acknowledge that people have raised this issue to me, whether this will create confusion about what are the current practices about measuring volume rebates for the purchases of inventories.
Okay. I've heard no other than John's point, which I think we can handle by adding something to the basis so that it's clear that this does not affect the accounting for inventory purchases or similar transactions. Does anybody believe we have to re-expose? Okay. You will all see revised wording when you are given the opportunity to cast a written ballot. Laurence intends to abstain. Is there anyone here who plans to object? to the issuance of the interpretation. Kaz, you're saying you will object?
Yeah, I would object because it's technically correct, I understand, but it doesn't help to it is not useful. So I think we discussed a lot, and technically I understand this is a correct interpretation, but it doesn't. I just want to respond as a this committee to that voices of that constituents who doesn't who are saying that this is not useful.
Okay, we do not publish. We're not going to ask you to draft an alternative view because we don't do that.
But what we will do is the staff paper that accompanies the final interpretation, after you've balloted it, when it goes to the ISB for its ratification, we will include in that staff paper details of your objection as to why you've objected.
And the explanation of the abstention, too.
Yes.
Okay, let's break for lunch. We need to be back and start on time at 2:15.